I do not know what lies ahead, the way I cannot see, yet one stands near to be my guide. He'll show the way to me. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land. I am weak, but thou art mighty. Hold me with thy powerful hand. We finished a couple of weeks back a series on the life of Abraham, and hope to be starting a new series 2 or 3 weeks from now. But tonight, and maybe next Lord's Day evening, I want us to look at a single important subject. It's the subject of guidance. The question of how Christians make decisions. We all have to make decisions every day and every hour of every day. Some of those choices don't seem particularly significant. Shall I wear my blue pullover or my green pullover this morning? Some of them, on the other hand, seem much more important. Shall I apply for promotion? Shall I downsize? Shall I move from this four-bedroomed house to a two-bedroom flat? And some of them, we can see, are life-changing decisions. They'll obviously affect every part of our life for the rest of our days. Shall I give up my job as a barrister and retrain as a bus driver? Shall I ask Janet or Mary or Louise, whoever it is, to marry me? There are decisions at one end of the spectrum that seem trivial, and decisions at the other end of the spectrum that are huge in their implications. And Christians want to make good decisions. They want to make decisions that will please God and that will lead to God's blessing on them and will lead them into usefulness in God's kingdom. Christians want to make the right decisions, especially when it comes to the big ones, the life-changing ones. Some of us worry a great deal in case we should make mistakes when it comes to those big decisions. We feel we can't afford to get them wrong. So whenever we come to one of those crossroads decisions, we ask ourselves, how can I be certain? How can I be sure what God wants me to do? How can I decide between yes and no in this situation? How can I decide between option A and option B? Many Christians worry and even panic when they've got some major decision to take. They desperately want God to tell them what to do. They want God to give them some clear guidance to follow. Do this, don't do that. Go down road A and avoid road B. Well, the Bible does promise that God will guide his children. The Bible is full of promises that God will guide his children. Make me to know your ways, O Lord, teach me your paths, guide me in your truth, and teach me. Good and upright is the Lord, therefore he guides sinners in the way. He guides the humble in what is right. He teaches the humble his way. Who is the man who fears the Lord? That man the Lord will instruct in the way that he should choose. It's a clear promise, isn't it? That if a man fears the Lord will instruct that man in the way that he should choose. He'll be given guidance. Many of you learned years ago a great Bible verse from the book of Proverbs. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. It's a great promise that God will guide his children. Or again, coming back to the psalmist, this is what the psalmist declares. I am continually with you. You hold my right hand and you guide me with your counsel. And afterwards you will receive me to glory. Isn't that a wonderful picture of the believer going through this world? He has the Lord continually with him. The Lord actually holds his right hand and leads him along. You guide me with your counsel. The Lord is always there telling him what to do, giving him counsel. The Bible is full of promises that God will guide his children. The question is, how will he do it? Now, like many of you, I imagine, like many of you, I've read a lot of books about guidance. And I've heard a lot of sermons about guidance. And even more influential in some ways, I've read a lot of books in which people talk from their own experience about how God guided them. And I've heard a lot of testimonies from Christians personally who were very eager to tell me how God guided them. Many of those books, and most of those people, I would have to say, have held a very similar view of guidance. I'm going to try and just sketch out point by point the view of guidance that comes across in a great deal of Christian literature and that we hear from a lot of Christian people. I'm going to put it to you in 5 points. The first is this, that God has a secret plan for your life. God has a secret plan for your life. These people often quote verses that talk about following God's will or walking in God's will. And the way that they explain those verses, they think that God's will means God's plan, a secret plan, which you have to find out and you have to follow. The idea that they'll give you is that there's a track that God wants you to follow. But you can't know the track in advance. You have to work out a point by point what's the next step forward in God's plan for your life. And you can't afford to get it wrong. Because if you step off that track, then you could be out of the will of God for the rest of your life. You've missed his plan for your life. It's a bit like a treasure hunt. You know, the sort of treasure hunt where you're given one clue at the beginning. And if you can work out what that clue means, it will lead you to a particular place. And then when you get to that place, you'll find another clue. And then there you open that clue and you puzzle it out, and that takes you on to another place. And so on, after you've found and after you've unraveled a dozen or 20 clues, then finally you'll reach your destination. But if you miss one of those clues, if you misunderstand one of those clues, or if you don't follow one of those clues, then you've lost it. You'll never get back on track. You'll never find, you'll never get to the goal that the person who's made up the treasure hunt wanted you to get to. There are people who talk in those terms. God has a secret plan for your life, and it's a plan that will lead you to blessedness. It's a plan that will lead you to usefulness. But you've got to find it. You've got to follow the track. You've got to read the clues right. Otherwise, you could miss out. I've met Christians who have said to me sadly, I went off track 10 years ago. I got my guidance wrong. I bought the wrong house because I got my guidance wrong. Or I married the wrong man because I got my guidance wrong. Or I went to the wrong mission field because I got my guidance wrong. And since then I've been out of God's will. I've missed out on God's plan for my life. I'll never have the blessing I might have had. Now, Christians have gone through their whole Christian life with that shadow over them, that they feel that they've missed out on the plan that God had written for their lives because they got their guidance wrong. The second point in this view of guidance is this. These people tell you that there are certain key decisions that you must get right in order to follow God's plan for your life. It is like following a path, as far as they're concerned, where you come to certain key crossroads where you can go left or you can go right, or maybe it's a roundabout where you could go in any one of half a dozen directions. But you come to those key points and you have got to get it right there in order to follow God's plan for your life. Clearly, most decisions aren't like that. They would admit it. They would say it's not really going to make any difference whether you wear the green pullover or the blue pullover. That isn't going to affect how useful you are as a Christian for the rest of your life. That isn't going to affect how blessed you will be all the years to come. But if you get this decision wrong, the decision about who you marry, the decision about what job you take, the decision about whether to go as a missionary, if you get one of those key decisions wrong, then from there on, you are doomed to second best. It all hangs on getting the key decisions right. And so, point three, they would say, at those key points, you need direct guidance from God. Maybe you don't need any direct guidance from God in order to decide what pullover to put on, or to decide whether to drink tea or coffee with your breakfast. But you do need direct guidance from God in the big decisions, the key decisions. You need God to tell you in some direct way whether you're supposed to go left or whether you're supposed to go right, whether you're supposed to be single or whether you're supposed to be married, whether you're supposed to stay in this country or whether you're supposed to go out to the mission field. You need God in some way to tell you, this is my will for you. This is my plan for you. You must do A, you must not do B. And so the fourth point then is this. that you must seek that sort of guidance from God. If you're not going to make a mess of your life as a Christian, when you come to those key decisions, you must ask God to tell you what decision, what choice you're to make. And he is willing to do that. And you must expect him to do that. And you must wait for him to do that. He will give you information. He will give you directions that you couldn't have got in any other way. He will tell you, this is the road, that is the to follow, this is the road to avoid. And then, the fifth point that follows from that, God may give you that guidance in many different ways. You must expect God to tell you what to do at those key points. How will he do it? Well, he could do it in lots of different ways. He could do it simply by giving you some overwhelming impulse to go this way rather than that way. Here I am. I've been puzzling for days, for weeks maybe, about whether this is the right thing or whether this is the right thing. Should I marry Mary or should I marry Edith? And then suddenly, one morning, I wake up and I think, it's got to be Mary. And I can't explain why, but it's just an overwhelming impulse. And I can say, that's God guiding me. It's God pushing me in this direction irresistibly. Many of my fellow pastors tell me that that's why they are pastors. They weren't sure if they should become pastors. But then one day they felt an overwhelming impulse and they knew it was God telling them that they should become a pastor. And so from that point on they applied for Bible college and they went off and they trained as pastors. They would say they were called to the ministry, that God has given them some direct revelation that they are supposed to be pastors. And if you ask them, well, how did he show you that? It was because they had this overwhelming impulse. Or it may not be that. It may be something more long-term. It may be by some growing impression, some deep-seated feeling that God gives to you. I remember a particular pastor explaining why he had left a particular church. It was a church on the mission field. And he had left that church and come back to the UK. And he was explaining how he knew how God had told him he must resign his pastorate and come back to the UK. And he said, well, when I went out onto the mission field, when I went out to that church, I felt a huge burden. I was burdened for that area. I was burdened for that church. It was such a strong feeling I had. But then, about 6 months ago, that burden began to decline. I no longer felt in the same way. Burdened for that area. And bit by bit, that burden just... And then one morning I woke up and I knew I didn't feel any burden any longer for that church or for that area. I knew that God had taken it away. And that was God's way of telling me that my work there was finished and that I should come home. It's a long-term impression. Impulses on the one side, these long-term impressions on the other, I suppose you'd lump together under a phrase like, God led me to do such and such. You know, that's the phrase I hear people using all the time. God led me to do such a thing. And they usually mean one or the other or something between those two. How many Christians have told me, I felt led to do such and such. I felt led to do such and such. Some Christians have told me that they felt led to come to this church and to preach here. They turned up one Sunday. And they talked to me at the end of the service and said, and I said, oh, what brings you here today? Well, the Lord led me to come here because he wants me to preach at this church. He had told them. He had given them this impulse, this strong impression that that's what he wanted them to do. But then it's not always those inner feelings, whether they're short-term or long-term. God sometimes guides his children through striking coincidences. Again, I remember I'm a particular missionary. He was led to become a missionary. He had this strong impression that God wanted him to be a missionary. But then once he had accepted the will of the Lord, then the question was, where should he go? I mean, he went to lots of missionary meetings where people working in different parts of the world would talk about their experience and the needs of this mission field or that mission field. But how do you decide between them all? He needed to know which mission field God wanted him to go to. Well, he went to one meeting, and the speaker was a missionary from Brazil. And he was very moving. He really was. What he had to say was such a moving presentation. And the man thought, well, maybe that's where the Lord wants me to go. But I need guidance. I need to be told by the Lord. And then as he walked out of the building, he saw an advert on a hoarding outside a shop for Brazil nuts. And he said, maybe that's the Lord speaking to me. Brazil! And just over the next weeks, everywhere he turned, the word Brazil seemed to turn up. He would turn on the radio, and there would be a report from Brazil. He would open a magazine, and there would be a picture of some building in Brazil. And he said, well, I just knew that the Lord was making it plain that Brazil was where he wanted me. String of coincidences. The Lord speaking to him through those coincidences. Well, some of you tittered when I told that story. Of course, some people get their guidance in a more spiritual way. They get their guidance through Bible verses. Bible verses which God uses to speak to them directly. That could mean various things. I've heard plenty of Christians tell me about how suddenly a Bible verse came to their mind with overwhelming force, so that they knew that that was God speaking to them. So a man is questioning whether he should stay at home and serve the Lord in this country, or whether he should go as a missionary abroad. And then suddenly, during his quiet time, he's not reading Matthew's Gospel, he's reading one of the Psalms, but suddenly a verse crashes into his mind, go into all the world and preach the Gospel. He says, that's God speaking to me. All right, that verse was not originally addressed to him. It was addressed to the apostles. But now he's sure that God has just taken that verse and hammered it home into his brain as God's way of saying, this is for you. You mustn't stay where you are. You must go out into all the world. Sometimes it's not that the verse just crashes into somebody's mind. Sometimes it's It's that it suddenly jumps off the page. I've heard that phrase so many times. Somebody is just reading through the Bible, and they're just scanning the page, and then suddenly one verse hits their eye. And it's a verse that seems to have direct relevance to them. Look, I've just opened this Bible at random. And suddenly, bang, I can see in front of me these words, fields shall be bought in this land. Well, here's a man who's been wondering whether he should invest in property, whether he should move out of town and buy a farm. And suddenly, bang, it jumps at him out of the Bible. Fields shall be bought in this land. That's God talking to him, isn't it? It's God speaking to him through the Bible. After all, the Bible's a living book, isn't it? Sometimes it's that a person is reading the Bible in their own quiet time, or they're listening to a sermon, and suddenly a verse that they read, or a verse that they hear being read, suddenly they realise that it's so relevant to them. Remember a young man explaining why he was training for the ministry. He had left university. He was an earnest young man. He wanted to be useful in the Lord's service. He would love to be able to preach and teach to others, but he wasn't very good at it. People didn't find his preaching very helpful. In the end, he finished up working as a waiter in a local restaurant. But he didn't like that because it was boring and because he felt he was wasting his life. And then he was reading the Bible in his quiet time. And he was in Acts chapter 6. And there it was. It is not right for us to leave the word of God to wait on tables. I can remember him saying it now. He said, do you ever get the feeling that God is speaking to you? He knew that God was speaking to him. He knew that God was telling him that he must get on with preaching the word and not wait on tables. Now, again, that verse, when you read it in its context, doesn't say anything about that young man. It says that the apostles mustn't leave the word of God and wait on the tables of the widows in Jerusalem. It doesn't say that every young man who's bored with working in a restaurant must leave their job. But he felt that was God speaking to him. That was my fifth point. That God guides you in all these different ways. Through impulses, through impressions, through coincidences, and through Bible verses which take on special significance for you. Significance which you wouldn't guess just by reading them in the first place. As I say, some of you have grinned, tittered, as I've talked about various folk who have talked in this way. Perhaps I've chosen some extreme examples. Brazil nuts. But remember, this is the way that some of the godliest and finest and most useful servants of God have looked for God's guidance. They've been convinced that they need to have some directions from God. And they've pleaded with God to give them those directions. And they tell us that these are the ways that they've come. read many, many missionary autobiographies, and these folk will tell you that this is how God directed them, and that this was how God supported them. That at the hardest times, when they were most bewildered, they received this sort of guidance. Perhaps the great majority of pastors whom I've known would say that they had their call to the ministry in one or another of these ways. And that that's what's kept them going in the ministry. That they could say, well, it was God who told me to become a pastor. Even if none of the congregation I'm serving want me as a pastor. God has told me. Because he guided me. He gave me that guidance back then. Earnest Christians have real Christians, godly Christians, have sought God's guidance in these ways. And when you read their testimonies, some of them will be comic and will make you laugh, but some of them you will also find very moving and very appealing. And you'll be left thinking, why don't I ever get guidance like this? Why aren't I given the same sort of step-by-step steering through the crises? What is wrong with this way of thinking about guidance? I'm only going to give you one thing that's wrong with it tonight. And it's this. It's not there in the Bible. The Bible just does not talk in that way about Christians and how we should make decisions. The Bible never talks about a secret plan that God has and which we've got to find out step by step. The Bible does talk about a secret plan which God has. But that's simply his plan for governing everything in the universe. And it happens infallibly. But the Bible never suggests that we're on some sort of treasure hunt where we've got to work out clues step by step or we go off track. The Bible just isn't there. Secondly, the Bible never distinguishes between key decisions and trivial decisions. You see, built into this view of guidance I've been talking about is the idea that there are the big decisions, which really matter, where you've got to seek guidance, and there are the trivial decisions where you don't need to seek guidance. But the Bible never makes that distinction, does it? The Bible talks about God guiding us continually. The Bible talks about God constantly there holding our hand, guiding us. When people talk in this way and draw that line between the big key decisions and the other decisions, they never tell me how to know which are which. All right, I don't need a special guidance about whether to wear my green pullover or my blue pullover. Do I need special guidance about what sweet to buy for my living room? How, is that a little trivial one or is that a big one? About which car I buy? Is that a trivial one or is that a big one? This whole theory depends on the idea that there are some key decisions where we do seek God's guidance and where God is going to give us information, clear direction, and there are others where we can't expect it. But how do you know which is which? Thirdly, the Bible never tells us that we need direct instruction from God. That we need to look for God to give us revelation new revelation of what he wants. The Bible never says, expect God to tell you directly what he wants you to do. This is going to be the big thing we'll talk about next week, God willing. The Bible doesn't say, look for God to give you direct guidance, to tell you directly. The Bible says God has given you his guidance. And it's here in this book. All the directions that you need to live a life that honours God have already been given to you. Isn't that what Psalm 119 is all about? The fact that we've got God's law, we've got his statutes, we've got his precepts, we've got his commandments, we've got his rules. And if you live according to them, you won't go wrong. If you've got God's commands, and if you've got the principles that the Bible teaches, which cover every part of life, then if you live by them, you won't go wrong. The reason why God doesn't need to give us new revelations, whether it's through impulses or impressions or coincidences or anything else, is because he's already given us everything we need to know. The Bible is able to make us wise for salvation, and then it's able to rebuke us and to teach us and to correct us and to train us in righteousness so that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work. The Bible never tells us that we need direct instructions from God. God speaking afresh because he's already spoken. And what he said is comprehensive. And the Bible never tells us to seek guidance from God. We're going to look at some examples of this next week. The Bible, that when you read through the New Testament books, you find Christians having to make all sorts of decisions about all sorts of things. Where in all the New Testament are Christians told to seek guidance from God in those decisions? A widow wants to know if she could get married again, if she should remarry, and if so, whom she should remarry. Yeah, you've got a widow. She wants to know, shall I get married again? And if so, to whom shall I get married again? Now, what does Paul write to her? Does he write to her, well, first of all, you must seek guidance. You must wait till the Lord has told you whether to get married or not. And then if he tells you you can, then you must seek guidance about who you should marry. You must wait until the Lord has told you which is the right man for you. Listen to what Paul actually says. He says, a wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. But if her husband dies, she is free to be married. She is free to be married to whom she wishes. Only in the Lord. He says, he says to this widow, you're free. You are free to get married. There's one stipulation, you must marry a believer. You can only marry in the Lord. She says, but oh, how will I know which is the right man? You know, there might be two believers who are asking her to marry them. Paul says, then be married to whom you wish. He doesn't tell her to seek guidance. He just says, do what you wish, whichever man you think will make you happier. The church in Ephesus has to make a decision about whom it should appoint as elders, overseers, pastors. And what does Paul say? Does he say, well, you better start seeking guidance about this? You know, you mustn't make a mistake about this. Don't move on this until the Lord tells you that it should be Jack rather than Simon. Paul doesn't talk in those terms at all. He simply lays out a list of qualifications that a man must have to be an elder. He must be above reproach. He must be the husband of one wife. He must be sober-minded. He must be self-controlled. He must be respectable. He must be hospitable. He must be able to teach. He must not be a drunkard. And so on. And then Paul says, well, if a man fulfills those criteria, you don't need guidance, just appoint him. There's nowhere in the New Testament where Christians are told to seek guidance directly from God. Instead, they're told, obey God's commands in the Bible. Work out God's principles from the Bible and use your common sense. So the Bible never tells us that we need new direct instructions from God. The Bible never tells us to seek such guidance. And the Bible never tells us that we should expect to get guidance in all those different ways I just listed. Yes, we've got examples of men who did get guidance through impulses and impressions and coincidences. We've got apostles, we've got prophets, men who were in direct contact with God, to whom God spoke directly and said, go here, go there, do this, don't do that. But the Bible never tells us to expect to be guided directly in any of the ways that I've listed. This system of guidance that I've tried to outline for you tonight, it's a chimera. If you don't know what that means, look it up afterwards. It's a will-o'-the-wisp. And people who follow it can sometimes get themselves into the most terrible messes. Oh, if I listed out all the people who have said to me, I feel led to do such and such. And then if I were to tell you all the different tangles and messes that they got themselves into as a result, you wouldn't be laughing, you'd be breaking your hearts for those people. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. I quoted that verse before. Promise that God will guide you. Where does it come from? From Proverbs. And what is it followed by? Hundreds of detailed written directions from God. Directions about marriage, about money, about drink, about debt, about friendship. He doesn't say, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not unto your own understanding, ask God for guidance. He says, and here's all the guidance you need. And he lays it all out for them, verse by verse, chapter after chapter. God's guidance for the whole of life is to be found in this book.